Welcome to That Makes Total Sense, the podcast where we talk about faith, finance, and everyday life in a way that makes total sense. I'm your host, Alexis Busetti. On this podcast, you'll hear the personal stories of friends I'll be interviewing who are doing familiar things in new and innovative ways. We'll answer questions specifically about money and our relationship with it, and we'll explore faith and Bible teaching together. In all of these, it's not about changing our convictions as much as it is about messing with our methods. We'll have a lot of moments here together where we pause, then say, that makes total sense. Hi, I'm Alexis Busetti, and welcome to That Makes Total Sense. This is the second episode of a two-episode series with comedian Bob Smiley. He is hilarious and he keeps it real. So go back and listen to the first episode if you happen to miss it. In this conversation, Bob is going to tell us about some twists and turns in his life that left him wondering if God could even still use him. And I know that we have all been there. So sit back, relax, and listen to this amazing conversation with comedian Bob Smiley.
All right, everybody. Well, we are back with Bob Smiley for episode two, and I am so excited to have you back on That Makes Total Sense. Welcome back, Bob.
Thanks. Yeah, before we started recording, we were talking about like how, you know, it looks like it's a rock star life and everything, and I've always thought about like, because you do have to work hard. Like in the first segment, we talked about, you know, how God opened doors and stuff, but you still have to be willing to work really hard. And I've had so many moments where I'm dragging my bags at 4 a.m. from the rental car company across the parking lot in the snow to fly back home. And I always thought, man, if people could see that, they'd realize like, oh, it's not this glamorous like lifestyle or anything. It is hard. It can be hard work and stuff. But people just see you on stage and they think, oh, first of all, if you make it look easy, then people, you know, anybody thinks they can do it, you know?
Right, right.
Yeah. Surgeons don't do that. You don't watch somebody and be like, oh, I bet I could do open heart surgery. You know, like, but people, if you make people, a room full of people laugh, everybody, you know, thinks, oh, it's so easy and there's no, you know, hard work to it, but it is. I remember I was in a gym one time and I was in the dry sauna and a guy goes, I see you in here at all different times. What do you do? And I was like, I'm a comedian. And he paused. And this is probably the most insulting, but like from the heart response, he goes, oh, well, then what does your wife do? Like, you could tell there was this mentality of like, well, he can't make money.
He's counting up. Like you have rent, you have groceries. Your wife must be the surgeon.
Yeah, he's got to be the surgeon. And I was like, and I was a little snarky. I was like, oh, she sleeps on large stacks of money, which is not true. It's a very small stack that she sleeps on. But,
right,
I was
exactly.
But yeah, it was just so because people just don't, they just can't comprehend of, you know, what this kind of job entails and stuff. But yeah, I always like every time I'm dragging my bags, you know, especially in the snow, like I always take the earliest flight to get home to my family. And
right.
I was like, this is what people need to see. So
this is it. I mean, it takes you back to when I was growing up, you know, there's all those phrases that your parents or the older people in your life say on a regular basis. And you're like, I don't know where that came from. It doesn't make sense. But the one I keep thinking of is, well, you know, he puts his pants on one leg at a time, just like everyone else, right? And like, that's what they mean, right? It's like, he's dragging his suitcases. Like, on our break, I'm putting laundry in because, you know, our kids start school tomorrow. And it's like, everybody, no matter what we do, we just have real lives. We have everyday lives. We have to work hard and we have to keep up a household and we've got to do all those things.
Yeah, my butler puts my pants on me one leg at a time.
Exactly. I just saw a tweet. Somebody was kind of making fun of Oprah a little bit. It's like, how does she have so much peace at age 64? You know, step one, have $1 billion, right? Yeah. Okay, so maybe Oprah is not dragging her own suitcases, but.
Yeah, I'm a huge Bruce Willis fan, and I read an interview with him, and they were like, how do you stay humble? And he, I think it was Die Hard, like, I don't know, Part Pie. There's so many of those, but he had finished filming a Die Hard movie, and he said that they did the wrap, and the next day he was carrying dirty diapers out to the trash can.
Yes.
And he was like, how do you not stay humble if you're like, you know, like
dirty diapers will keep anyone humble.
Yeah. And so
they
should probably have
like those backstage. You know, like if somebody kind of gets, as my grandma would say, too big for their britches, you know, you just bring back like an almost potty trained 2-year-old boy who's yeah. like, you know, up the back and everything else, and be like, oh, right before you go on, we really need you to change this kiddo.
Need to change it. Oh, that would be so humble. You don't see that in a lot of riders for stars and stuff.
Right, exactly. So let's talk about this, because really, I mean, where we left off, I don't think anybody's thinking you're dragging your suitcase. I mean, where we left off in the story, and by the way, if you have not heard the first episode with Bob, do yourself a favor and go back and listen to it, because it was so good. But where we left off was you were on your way out the door, getting ready to go to an interview for a banner shop in a warehouse, thinking you may have run out of shows. It may be coming close, when the newsboys call and say, hey, we've got 68 shows coming up. Would you go on the road with us? So take us from there, kind of to where we got, you know, in Galveston a couple of weeks ago, when you said, you know, maybe you don't know my story. So that's kind of where we left off in your story, was newsboys are calling, bro. And that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah. And that was my second tour of the Newsboys. And I mean, that happened throughout, like anytime there, you know, shows weren't coming in, like my own shows and stuff, bands would call me. I ended up doing four tours with the Newsboys, and
amazing.
Third day. And like, I just was very blessed that, you know, that people enjoyed me being on tour with them. And, you know, again, it was a lot of it. The Newsboy, actually, Peter Furler, the lead singer, was, he was doing an interview one time, and they asked, yeah, how come they bring me out? And he was like, because Bob comes from the School of Hard Knocks, the same way that we do. So when I get out on the road, I was doing all this extra stuff. That helped out on the tour. I didn't have this mentality of like, oh, well, I just do jokes. I can't, right. You know, jump in. But I would get up and early and train the, you know, volunteers that were doing merch, or I would train the security guards and, you know, just extra stuff to help out. And so, yeah, so I did all that, and I got to where I was doing my own shows, to the point where we could move back to Texas, because I could now live anywhere I wanted to, as long as I had a good airport. My hotel shampoo collection was massive. Right. My family was getting to travel with me a lot during the summers, and I kind of could pick my own schedule. So I was really only going out and doing usually Friday, Saturday shows, and then home all week.
Wow.
And so I was home more than most husbands and fathers, and man, life was good. It was really good. This is why I ask if people knew my story, because it, you know, my job is to make people laugh, but I really do it. This is the secret. I really do it so I can get on stage and talk about Jesus.
Amen.
And I learned a long time ago that if I can make people laugh, they'll lower their wall and allow me to get a message into them. And every comedian preaches. Chris Rock, when he's up there, he's ranting on something. He's preaching on something.
Right.
And so I always like to talk about God, but I'd had a really great childhood, a really great life. And then my career, just like I said, God opened the doors. And even though I had to work really hard, my career was going really well. And so I really hadn't gone through hardly any tragedy in my life. But the whole time I'm standing on stage and telling people God can get them through anything, but I really had not ever wandered in the desert, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Then we started going to this church, and we started hanging out with this other couple who was very wealthy. And we were vacationing together. And then I came home one day from a 3-day run, and my wife told me that she didn't want to be married anymore. And
wow.
It really came as a shock. I actually thought, this is terrible, but when she first said it, I thought she was joking. And
wow.
Then I had the thought, well, she's really not that funny. And like, I know that's terrible.
Right.
But that was my process.
Oh my goodness.
I honestly thought, oh, wait a minute, that's not. And then.
And yeah. How long had you guys been married at the time, Bob?
About 17 and a half years.
Wow. Okay. And,
yeah,
and fast 16, forward.
We're 16, right?
We're 16. We were 16 yeah. in June. Yeah.
I don't want that to scare you. Just don't
make no, it's a long time. It's a long yeah. time to be married and settled, and you, and everything is good. And so to kind of. Not to fast forward through the births of your children, but when we left off, you were living in Nashville, and when they called, when the Newsboys called for the second time, you had a wife and one child.
One child.
And so, yeah. But at that time, when you walked in and she said that, you had three boys, right?
We had three boys. Yeah. We had moved back to Texas because the biggest reason, you can't buy Bluebell ice cream in Nashville.
Amen. So, I mean, it's the truth. In Nashville, you really can't.
Well, you can now, but at the time.
Come on, Nashville. Yeah.
There was one restaurant, I think it's called Texana's or something, not a sponsor. And they served Bluebell ice cream in one of their desserts, but that was it. That was the only.
Right. But I mean, preach, you had to move back. Yeah, we only have Bluebell in the fridge.
Yeah. So we moved back and had two more kids, Texans. I always bug my oldest for being a Yankee. But yeah, so again, you know, life was good. And then she just walked out and just left. And so all of a sudden, my world caved in. Like I
didn't see
a woman. And then I had to sit back and watch not only my family fall apart, but this other family split up and fall apart. And we were, both families were really active in the church. And so it was like awkward watching people take sides and pews and look the other way. That was a big shock of people that knew what was going on and just looked the other way. And we're like, so all of a sudden I was in complete like depression and like my world was broken, like absolutely broken. And it was really bad for a while. In fact, we talked about Tim Hawkins. He was the first person I called. And I was like, I got to tell you what's going on. Because I wasn't telling anybody. Because I didn't know if it was going to completely derail my career. I didn't know if like Christian churches in general would even have somebody. You know, I didn't want to get divorced. We didn't really have problems. You know, it just all of a sudden I'm forced into this situation that I didn't want to be in. And, you know, I worried about everything. How do I take care of my three boys who were also incredibly shocked and, you know, were dealing with a lot of betrayal and anger and, you know, and especially just, you know, trust issues. We all had trust issues for a while because we were such good friends with this other family. And then all of a sudden, you know, it destroyed our family.
Well, now I'm going to pause real quick. And I know that I don't know that you're on purpose not saying it, but I mean, I think we're all kind of going, so what happened? I mean, your wife, did she have an affair with the husband?
They're married. They're married now.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I just wanted to kind of say that, like, I know it's a hard wound still and a scar still, but like, we're just going to say that for the clarity of who's listening.
And yeah. They actually,
you know, this couple and they ended up together, your wife and the husband.
Yeah, they claim, and I met with the elders of the church and the elders said, here's what's going to happen. They're going to claim that they just happened to leave their spouses the same week. Kind of right after a vacation in Mexico that we all took together. And then they're going to say that they claim to just lean on each other and then there's something grew. But they used to joke about how they were cut out for each other anyway before, you know, and just didn't see all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, so now, like, I was in this situation where I was like, if I really believed all the stuff I said on stage that God could get you through it, if I really was getting up and reading the Bible every day, and because I truly believed it, now was the time to put my money where my mouth was, you know.
Wow.
And I called Hawkins and he gave me the best advice. And I give this advice to anybody because I do talk about it, not at every show, but I do talk about it at shows. And I'm finding out that it resonates with a lot of people that are going through hurt, just to be reminded. And the thing that Hawkins said was, and I called him on the phone, and I remember I was out walking and I was just miserable. And, he just paused and he was angry because he, you know, knew he'd stayed at our house several times and, you know, really knew everything. And he was like, don't go through this alone.
Mm.
Like, do not go through this alone.
What a good friend. What great advice.
Yeah. Then he blocked my number and I couldn't call him anymore. But, no, he didn't. He didn't. But but it was because I would get the kids off to school and I would just sit in my house by myself in just this emptiness. And part of the problem with being a comedian is I am home all day during the week, but I'm usually gone during the weekends when normal people hang out. And so I didn't really have a lot of friends outside of like doing couple friends and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized like, most of my friends are comedians that are, you know, in other states and stuff. And so there was a lot, like first month was really hard because I would get the kids to school And then I would just sit in my empty house. It would just, you know, and this cloud of depression just caved in on me. And so I finally started taking his advice, was starting, you know, to call Hawkins and Darren Streblo and all these guys that, you know, are comedians that are friends of mine, and just kind of leaning on them. And, you know, I really went through the whole thing of thinking God couldn't use me. That's where I was leading to, because we were doing a fundraiser for some ministries in Galveston. And I wasn't really planning on talking about it, but I thought, man, this is like, we need help. And I was at a point in my life where I needed help. I needed community. I needed people to come in and surround me and the boys and, you know, help us. And I did. And it was odd. It wasn't the people from the church that I thought would step up and help. It was people that I'd kind of known. There's a girl named Brianna who I'd known forever, but we weren't really close friends. And she came over and started cooking for the boys, or, I started a life group, and started, you know, 'cause I really wanted to see if God could still use me. And so I started this life group, and we started doing meals, you know, for the life group. And I noticed that she was making way more food than what we needed, for, 'cause she's this amazing cook. And I realized, like, oh, she's doing that so that they would, and we would have it in my house. And she was doing it so she would leave all this food.
And you'd have all the leftovers to.
Yeah. For the boys and stuff. And so it was amazing to kind of look back, but that's why I brought it up at that show that night, because we need people investing in people's lives.
But let me ask you this, pause for a second, because I just think you've said it a few times, and for the listener, when you're saying, I wanted to know, or I wanted to see if God could still use me, what did you think would be the barrier? What was going through your mind? Because obviously we're seeing you on the other side of this, and it's so completely obvious that God is using you still, kind of in quotes, I feel like still. But what did you feel like inside your head or inside your heart was going to be the barrier? What happened that you thought, now I'm not usable, or I might not be usable by God?
Yeah, so my whole thing, and this comes from the enemy, but he loves to first of all, isolate you. Because
yes.
Then he could start messing with you. And so my whole thing was, I was too broken to be used. I still had tons of shows, and I would go out and try to do these shows, making people laugh, when inside I was just absolutely miserable, worried about my kids, worried about, you know, what are they being taught? Like, I didn't want them to think that, you know, what was happening was okay to do later whenever they started getting relationships. I didn't want them to have resentment and hatred and all the stuff that I was watching them deal with. So I really felt like I was too broken for God to use. And so that was what was going through my head. I remember the first show I did after she left, I'm standing on stage and all these people are laughing. And I just stopped for a second in my mind. I just thought, how can you guys be laughing? Don't you know how much pain is in this world? And
right.
So I really thought, like,
and
maybe
you didn't think that. You hadn't thought that 6 months before.
Oh, not at all. Before. No.
Yeah, you thought life's a party.
Yeah. A month and a half before that, life was a party. So, right. Yeah, I really did. And that's why I shared that story about the prison was I still don't even know how this guy got my number, but he just called and said, man, have you ever thought about doing, you know, performing at a prison? And ironically, I had talked to a couple of my comedian friends who had done prison stuff. And so I was already thinking about it, but I didn't know how to do it. And I was scared. Yeah. Like, I was really scared to go in and try to encourage prisoners and all that. And so, but I did that show, and I took my oldest son, and he loved it. And it was just a really good thing. And I'm just looking out at these prisoners who are just, you know, I mean, they're locked up, and they're, you know, the first guy that came in, you know, came up and thanked me for coming. And the thing is, I said, you know, you don't even know if I'm funny. And he goes, I don't care if you're funny. The fact that you're here gives us a little bit of hope.
Wow.
Sometimes a little bit of hope is all we need. And that's whenever it kind of dawned on me, like, oh, I just need to show up and just let God do whatever he's going to do. And, you know, quit thinking. And here's the deal. I really have read the Bible through several times, and God uses broken people all the time. So now that I'm kind of past it, I can look back and be like, I don't know what I was worried about, but at the time I really was just worried.
Right. And when you went to that to the prison and you shared that story at the show that I was at, I just thought, this is huge. When you shared that he had gone up to you and said, we're just so thankful you're here. And immediately my mind went to the place in the Gospels where Jesus says, you know, when you did this, you did it to me. When you gave someone a cup of cold water. And one of the things he says is when you visited in prison, you did that, you know, to me or for me. And I think for me, that's one of the forgotten parts of that verse. Like, I think we help the needy, we help the orphans, we help the widows, we give people food, we help them with their clothing, but to visit someone in prison, you know, you want to talk about brokenness and potential for misery in all those places, those men and women there. And just to have someone, because like Tim told you, don't do this alone, mm-hmm. but just to have someone show up and say, I see you. I care that you're here. I know that you're a human. You're a person who needs connection and needs joy and laughter. Like you said, 10 times more powerful than morphine or whatever it is. Like they need that. They need that just like everyone else. So,
yeah. And one of the guys, so they all came up afterwards. One of them looked at me and he goes, hey, I live by you. And I was like, what? I don't think I shared this on the stage, but he goes, I live by you. And I was like, you do? And he goes, yeah, you're the one who runs on, and he named the street that I run on. And he goes, I've seen you run there. And I quickly panicked. I made a joke. I was like, yeah, I'm the guy who runs with a really big can of mace. And,
right.
And he's like, dude, don't worry. Like, first of all, right. I'm in here for a while. And second of all, you were funny. So I'm going to give you a pass if I see you.
Oh,
running.
That's funny.
He was being funny.
Yeah.
But it also just reminded me of like, oh, these people, they're us. They've just somehow gotten on the wrong path.
That's right. That's exactly right.
That's the only difference. This guy lived down the street from me.
Right.
And got mixed up in some bad stuff and ended up getting caught and is paying his, you know, his price for that. But he's, you know, looked just like me. I mean, I'm in better shape because I'm a runner, obviously.
obviously.
But yeah.
Saw you as he was driving or walking.
Yeah, he was sitting on his porch. Yeah. but yeah, so that was kind of eye-opening too of like, man, we're all in this world. We all have temptations. We all make bad decisions, you know?
Right.
And but God can use all of us if we'll just allow him to.
So what did your kind of, I mean, the first phrase that came to my mind was your road to recovery because you were feeling so broken, but what did that look like moving forward? Cause you kept doing shows, but you were, you know, trying to develop a community that you didn't have before to kind of help get you and your boys through this. But what did that start to look like as you started to come through and experience your new reality?
Yeah. So my boys and I have always been very, very close. I'm always a very active dad. And, you know, because I don't have a job, I'm able to volunteer up at school. So I have known their, you know, teachers and principals and their friends and all that. So, and when the kids get off the bus, I'm home ready to play and do stuff. So I've always been very, very close with my boys. And so we really kind of like, you know, circled the troops and leaned on each other and all that. And so my boys and I, we got even closer. And so I felt like because I already had that relationship that it was easier to help them through all this kind of stuff. But yeah, it looked like it really was putting the, what is the phrase? I guess the money where your mouth is, okay, if I really do believe this, it's time to start like trusting in the fact that God does have us and he will protect us. He will take care of us. And so I did. And when I realized God could still use me, I started throwing myself into, like I said, I started a life group. Well, I started it for singles, like single, parents or, mm-hmm. people that were kind of our age group. And we just formed this community of people in my neighborhood, in my area, that would lean on each other, that we could all call on. And it did become this very, very cool community of people that have been through bad stuff, but we were still wanting to help other people. And so building that was great. And I started a tour called The Singles Not a Four-Letter Word with Carrie Pomeroli, who also—
I actually just saw that on your site. It looked like you're doing that maybe V-Day.
We're doing Valentine's Day here in the Woodlands. And it's going to be our third time back there doing that.
Love that.
And it'll be different, you know, material and stuff. But yeah, and so we started touring around the country doing that show. And churches that don't really have anything for singles, they started bringing us in to, And it was kind of eye opening. There were so many people that were single in the areas, and there's not very many single stuff. And they all of a sudden were hearing a message. You know, they were laughing and having a great time, but they also were hearing this message of, you're important. Just because you Absolutely. Don't look like what the world says, you know, you graduate from college, you get married, you have, you know, 2.5 kids, and you're, you know, end up sitting on a porch sipping tea with your spouse. You know, that's how life is supposed to go. Well, not everybody's life goes like that.
Right.
It doesn't matter. Your life is your path that God created. And, you know, he has plans for you, plans to prosper you. And so if you will keep your eyes on him and try to follow his word and his guidance and love on other people, you still matter in this world.
That's so good.
There were a lot of singles that we talked to that just felt like they really didn't matter because they didn't know where they fit in.
Wow. Wow. And you were just, I mean, I know you didn't anticipate that, but what an amazing message to be able to spread to them that matter. And it wasn't a them anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't a them anymore.
I would have never started this ministry if I wouldn't have just been blindsided and, you know, thrown into this situation. I remember the second time that I ever talked about it, the first time was at Lakewood, and they actually asked me to talk about it. And I wasn't planning on talking about it, but I called them. And I was like, I just want to be honest, because I was doing a marriage thing that I'd done the year before.
Right.
Everything was rosy and awesome. And I was like, I'm still very pro marriage, but I just want to let you guys know what's going on. So I'm, you know, I'm not coming in and, you know, feeling like I'm hiding something from you. And they were like, would you please talk about it on stage?
Wow.
And that was kind of refreshing of, oh, church is okay with the fact that not everybody is perfect. You know, we don't have to put on this front or this mask. Here's a church that loves people where they are and wants to help them, which is what church should be. And I kind of had this mentality of like, no, we all put our mask on. We go to church on Sunday. How are you? I'm fine, kind of thing.
And I'm telling you, I want to go on record right now and saying I am a huge fan of Lakewood. And actually, when I thought you should do the singles group at Lakewood, because there, I didn't know you'd been doing stuff with them for years, but I know they have a big active singles group there. But they are so good, exactly what you're saying, at loving people exactly where they are, just like God does.
I mean, if people at Lakewood are listening, amazing. I would love to do their. I haven't done anything for their singles there. I've only done marriage stuff there. And I've done it.
Well, I think they have a pretty big singles ministry. I think at least I was on the elevator with some singles a few weeks ago, and they were talking about where they were headed. But yeah, right. Lakewood is amazing. I just love it. And I'm so thrilled that that's such a testimony. I feel like that would be really affirming to you if you're still in that spot where you're thinking, God, can you even use me? And they're going, talk about this at a marriage seminar.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's eye-opening. And then people after the show, they came up and couples and said, yeah, you know what? Because I was telling them that everybody has a target on their back, and that marriages are definitely under attack. And
so I
shared it with them. I said, I'm no different. In fact, my marriage is done. You know, and I didn't go into a lot of details because it was so fresh.
Right.
But I was like, I'm forced into this. And I, you know, I wish I could have seen it coming or, you know, stopped it somehow. And, you know, you guys may be in that situation where your marriage isn't good, but you're just letting it sit there and just get stagnant and you're not doing anything. There's an attack on it and you're not even, you know, realize. And I had people come up and go, yeah, we didn't realize it, but our marriage hasn't been good for a while. And so again, another like feather in my cap of like, oh God, maybe he can use that. And so then I flew to Michigan the next day. Again, wasn't planning on talking about it, but got to a part in my show where I was like, I really felt strongly that maybe I should talk about this. But I was so worried about offending people or people, you know. And so I got off stage, and there was a guy immediately went to my merch table, and he was standing there and he was shaking and he was tall. And I walked up and he grabbed my shoulder and he pulled me over to the side. And I thought, oh, here comes the offended part. How dare you talk about stuff like it? And he looked at me and he was shaking, and he goes, my wife left me yesterday.
Oh no.
And at that show, I talked about community. I talked about like, don't go alone and stuff. And he was like, I don't know who you are. I didn't want to come. I didn't think I was going to laugh. I really didn't think I was going to laugh as much as I did, but I definitely didn't expect to hear anything positive. But the fact that you stood up there and said that no matter what you're going through, you can get through it if you stay focused on God. And I talked about community. He goes, my friend drug me here. I didn't want to come,
but
this is what I needed. And my friend knew that. And so after that, man, I was on fire. I was like, all right, come on, let's do this. You know? So it's kind of this mentality of, I didn't want to be in that situation. I didn't want to be the one to carry the ball on that.
Right.
But I was glad that God still had me on the team.
Yes.
You know? Like I was still, oh, I'm still part of this. It's just going to look different than what I thought it was going to be.
Right. And you know, I've heard people say, and again, it's something that I say, if I'm being completely honest, it's something that I say with fear still a little bit, but it's like your testimony, our testimony isn't ours. It belongs to the Lord.
Yeah. And
so, you know, when on the first part where you said, you know, your friend was kind of like, hey, I wish I'd have been addicted to crack. I'd have this great testimony. You know, and one of my friends at ACU, actually, she's going, my testimony is the same, you know, grew up in this great Christian home, just like so amazing, whatever in it. And, but she has come to the point where she really owns it, you know, but I'm like, but that's what God had for you. Not everyone else has that. And there is a beauty in that purity. And there's a beauty in that testimony. But like yours, when things shift, there's a beauty in the shift too. Yeah. And we can't control it. And we don't own our own testimonies, but God owns them. And we get to choose to walk them out in light and truth and in love like you have done. Or we have the other choice to kind of, you know, let it spiral or let it go stagnant or say, maybe God was great when things were good, but maybe he's not so great anymore. And we get the choice to like you said, put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah.
But that's amazing. And you kept doing shows and your story didn't end there. You're not a single dad. Spoiler alert, Bob's not a single dad. He's showing me his wedding ring. He's not a single dad anymore. So what happened?
She's calling me right now. She's actually calling me.
Sorry, just 1 second.
Yeah, she took her, our youngest is at the dentist right now. So, So I started dating. My kids were actually the ones who came to me and were like, you know, you should date and all that. And I, at first I didn't, you know, I was just like, it's so awkward and all that. But I'll be honest, it was kind of nice to go out with somebody that like would sit at a table and actually listen and actually kind of be interested in me. And so that made me feel good because again, you know, I just felt like worthless. And so that was kind of therapeutic. And, but then I found out pretty quickly at my age, you know, the first couple of dates is always just looking for the crazy. 'Cause there's so much out there. Like we all have baggage. I've got it. Like I had huge trust issues and all this kind of stuff. So we all have baggage, but
there's baggage and then there's crazy is kind of what you're.
There's crazy. Yeah. If United won't let you fly because you're over your limit of baggage, that's probably the kid. But so I kind of had gotten – I dated for a little while, and then I decided that, you know what, I was done. I was actually going into Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, and then I had a bunch of shows in January, February. And so I kind of decided I wasn't going to start dating. I was just going to put dating on hold, just concentrate on my kids and and my career. And so I wasn't going to – and then – I was on this dating app and I really was on this dating app because it was so entertaining because the profile stuff is I spent my life trying to write these really good, smart comedy jokes. I had no idea it was all on one website for me. Like, it was insane. And so this lady just messaged me. And even though I'd already decided I wasn't dating, the message was, it was very well written. It wasn't just sup. How's it going? You know, like that. Right. And she didn't know who I was, which I like. Cause I had several people, especially early on, who like didn't know I was single. And then they saw me on this dating app and they were like, oh my, I had one lady go, oh my gosh, if we go out, my kids are huge fans. Can I bring my kids? And I was like, delete. Like, how do you? And so she was so funny in her message and very smart. And she talked about Jesus a lot. And so I was like, okay, I'm not dating now. I'm taking a break, but I've got to respond to her. And so I responded to her and then we talked a little, we messaged back and forth. And then I was in a hotel one night. I just got back from a show and she was like, hey, I don't know if this is too forward, but I'd like to talk to you on the phone. And so I called her that night. She was like, what are you doing? And I was like, well, I'm packing and I'm going to get some sleep. I have to leave the hotel at 5 a.m. And we just started talking and we just hit it off. And then I was sitting at the desk in the hotel room and my phone started buzzing. And it was because my alarm was going off that I'd set during the day and it was 5 a.m.
Wow.
And we talked for 6 hours. This is really unprofessional, but she's texting me. Hold on. Oh my gosh, I love her so much. Anyway, she's they just got out of the dentist and they want to grab lunch. So we talked for 6 hours on the phone, and we never stopped and was like, hey, do you realize how long we've been talking? Like, it was not that.
Wow. And,
but then I was like, I really had kind of made a vow to myself that I was not, you know, I was just going to put dating on hold, but I have to meet this girl.
Wow. And so
I flew back home. And then I think 2 days later we went out to lunch and that was it. Like I was done. Like,
wow.
It really, I mean, obviously it took a while like to get to know her, and she kind of had gone through a lot of the same stuff that I'd gone through. And so we weren't in any big rush. We both still kind of had our walls up, you know, and both right. of us had a lot of trust issues and stuff like that. So it wasn't like immediately we were googly eyed and stuff, but immediately I was drawn to this lady. And the fact that she loved Jesus way more than she loved me or anybody else, I was like, oh, this is what I've been missing in my life forever. And it really was just, it was eye opening. So yeah, so we dated for quite a long time. She met my kids and just fell in love with him. My kids loved her. And I met her. She has two kids. One of them's upstairs stomping around. And hey!
I hear him. That's great.
Come say hi. I'm doing a podcast interview. This is Dylan. I'm about to come down here. But anyway, yeah. And so we got married December 15th. You want to be on a podcast?
Sure.
Be super famous.
Hey, Dylan.
This is my bonus kid, Dylan. This is one of the kids that gave me the cup.
I was going to say the mug. The mug is amazing. Classic. Beautiful. I love it.
Yeah. You have anything to add to this podcast?
BobSmiley.com.
Oh, look at that.
BobSmiley.com. Yes. Businessman.
This kid's awesome. My favorite now. Sorry. That's very unprofessional, but I don't care. I'm a dad before I'm anything else.
That's right. So you guys dated for a while. Story.
We dated for a while.
And then got married. So how long have you guys been married?
We got married December 15th.
Oh, I mean, you're talking last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You're a newlywed, man.
We are newlyweds. It's so great.
That's amazing. I love that. I love that story. Thank you for sharing that with us, because it's like you said, you've got this great life with all of these amazing surprises and twists and turns. And then when something like this happens, you get to say this foundation that was being built when everything was rosy is still strong.
Yeah. That's actually
good.
That's my main message. I'm getting ready to tour in the Northeast, and that's going to be my main message, is that, you know, I was single and then I was married. And then I was, you know, gone through betrayal and all this stuff. And then I was this really broken single person again. And then I met this amazing godly woman. And now I'm married. I'm happier than I've ever been in my entire life. But all of that is not to send a message of you're only going to be happy unless you find the right perfect person for
right.
you. And it is exactly what you said. The only relationship that matters on this planet is your relationship with Christ. And if that is strong, then that gives you that strong foundation that even when the world knocks you down, it's strong enough to stand back up on and still go through the world with hopefully a smile on your face and a purpose in your heart.
That's amazing. Thank you so much, Bob. I'm going to let you get to your lunch with your fam jam with all of you guys. I mean, I'm guessing you guys haven't started school yet either, because it looks like everybody's kind of out and around. Two more days. Yeah, we've got one more day. This is the last day of summer for my kiddos. So tell everybody how we can get a hold of you. How can we know where you're going to be so that we can come see you? We know a little bit, BobSmiley.com, but how else
can we... Nailed it. I read it in time. Like, that's so good.
Yeah,
my website, BobSmiley.com. Facebook, I'm really active on Facebook and Instagram, somewhat Twitter, but so my Instagram and Twitter account is BobSmileyComic. And then my Facebook is Bob Smiley Comedy. And my wife and I actually do a weekly video called the Smiley Minute, which is a look at strange news that has happened the week before.
Awesome.
So that's on, you know, YouTube and Facebook and all that kind of stuff. And I really am great about answering messages and stuff like DMs and all that. So if anybody has any questions, let me know.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Bob. This has just been the best. This has been the best. So thanks for joining us. And
you know what he said?
Oh, no, huh?
He was like, thanks for the phone, and I also got your credit card number.
Yeah. So you have someone following in your footsteps.
Yeah, a little bit.
Third generation comedy. I love it so much. I love it so much. Well, thank you, Bob. I really appreciate it, and we'll talk to you next time.
All right, we'll see you. Bye.
Thank you.
So thank you again so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you won't miss an episode. Share the link with your friends. You can visit us at thatmakestotalsense.com. And until next time, this is Alexis Busetti, remembering to do well for ourselves so we can do good for others. Bye.